Hi.
Hello, we are doing this from virtuality.
Yeah.
So
it's a little different.
Welcome to PB&J Podcast, where I am quarantined. That's nice, right?
Am I breathing in my microphone?
A little bit, yeah. Do I sound okay? Because I couldn't find my mic.
I have it on my earbud, so it might sound a little strange.
Does mine sound strange?
Oh, no, yours sounds actually perfect. Mine probably sounds like crap. Don't tell me the laptop's dead.
Anyways,
cannot be happening. Oh, my goodness. I just ran around the entire freaking house, too.
Oh, great.
That's all right, one sec. Entertain the listeners while I try and plug this in.
So, everyone hear about Bob Saget?
Oh my god, it's so sad.
Right? I'm eating pistachios.
I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to fix this. Oh, I got it. It was dead.
Okay. I was exposed like 3 times in 2 days.
All right. Should we do our little introductory?
Yeah. Welcome to PB&J Podcast. The P stands for something, the J stands for something, and the
B stands for something, but we don't know what.
It all stands for something. Kind of like life. Ironic, huh?
Okay, so I'm not going to tell you who this is about. I mean, obviously, you already know if you've read the title. But, oh my gosh, where are my glasses? I am freaking blind. Okay. So, if you read the title, you obviously know who it is. But I'm not going to tell you.
I don't, Koji. I haven't been told.
You have.
Well, then I forgot.
I'm not going to tell you, though, until later. But, I mean, if you read the title, you know. But, anyway, I'm going to do a little trigger warning now. Just because we should have one in the beginning of every episode. There's murder. Yeah. A lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, also, one more quick warning. If I get any names wrong, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to disrespect the dead. I'm not trying to disrespect the dead or anything, but
mm-hmm.
Am I being too loud? I'm like literally speaking in my microphone. Okay. Should I begin?
Yeah.
Okay. It was the morning of July 14th, 1966, in Chicago's Jeffrey Manor. It's like the neighborhood in Chicago. Mm. Anyway, I feel so weird recording in my house.
I know.
We've recorded here once. Anyway, so in the neighborhood Jeffrey Manor of Chicago, Corazon, or Cora, let's see if I can pronounce her name right, Armlocraft.
I really can't help her this time.
Armoral? Oh my god.
Yeah. Give up. It's fine.
I even typed out how to say it, too.
You sent me a list of the names.
Let's see. All right, let's continue. Anyway, her name's Cora. She slid out from under a bed in hopes the night before was all a nightmare. Mm-hmm. She left the room that she was in, and she saw the 8 bodies of her friends and roommates. She ran outside and began screaming for help.
Well.
8 student nurses, aged 20 to 24, had been tied up, strangled, and brutally stabbed.
Oh, my God. I thought she was saying 8 student nurses came in.
Oh, like, no. 8 student nurses were murdered.
That's not good.
No, it's not. It didn't take long for the police to arrive. A homicide detective entered the townhouse that stood as a dormitory for student nurses. He recalls seeing bloody bodies everywhere.
Ew!
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you die. There's usually blood. Sometimes.
Ew.
When there's a murder, yeah, there's blood. Anyway. Mm. In the bedrooms, they find the bodies of 7 women who had been strangled and stabbed repeatedly.
Wait, where's the 8?
I'm getting to it.
Okay.
In the living room. This is so weird not seeing you here.
I know.
Okay. It's a little sad. Anyway. In the living room, they find another body. She had been tied up and showed signs of sexual assault.
Is she dead?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Duh.
That's 8 bodies.
The police believed it was going somewhere.
What?
I thought it was going somewhere different. I was like, okay.
Going where?
I don't know.
Okay. Oh my gosh, I lost my spot. This is why I need you. Okay. The police believe that there had to have been 2 to 3 perpetrators minimum. Oh my goodness. Okay. Cora was in hysterics. I mean, understandably so. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I would be too.
Yeah. They immediately started questioning her. I mean, she had only just moved from the Philippines 2 months prior. She was a shy girl.
That seems a little, you know, racial. Like,
well, like,
so if that's the only reason you're... Anyways, let's continue. Yeah. If that's the only reason you're suspecting someone.
I mean, they're not suspecting her of it.
Oh.
She's the only survivor.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're just questioning her about what happened.
Oh, I thought you were, like, questioning, like, her, like...
No.
Okay.
Anyway, so they gave her a sedative to help her calm down, and eventually she calmed down enough to give them the information that they needed.
I would have been in more than two. I would have been, like, freaked the hell out.
Yeah. Warning, I'm about to drink water, so,
It's okay. The beauty of this is I can tell you if something sounds terrible.
Did you hear it?
No.
Oh, thank goodness. I don't really care, to be honest. I mean, what more did the viewers expect at this point?
Yeah.
Okay, so Cora had went to bed at 10:30 that night. And about 30 minutes later, someone knocked on the door. She answered it. It was just one man, and he had a gun.
Oh!
She said he was tall, 6 feet, blonde, skinny, around 25, white with a southern drawl. Well, so I guess
if she is able to describe him, that answers my question. She's not dead yet.
The police were shocked hearing it was just one man. Cora had explained he had light eyes. Blue. Okay. So, just make sure that you're caught up here. Okay. Just in case you got lost.
I got it.
Okay, you got everything. Mm-hmm. 8 people were killed, 1 survivor.
Yep.
We got it? Okay.
Yep.
Just checking. Make sure you're with me. I can't see if you look confused.
Okay. I don't.
One of the detectives usually worked on burglary cases.
Okay.
He asked around, asking... One second, I'm trying to turn on my lamp.
Okay.
Oh my goodness, where was I? He asked around, asking if anyone had seen anyone matching the description. He went to an automotive and gas station place.
Okay.
Like, together.
And you're just having a tough time, huh?
Yeah, it's difficult. And he asked the guy working if he saw anyone matching the description. The man working told the detective that someone matching in the description was in there. He tells them that the man had a Born to Raise Hell tattoo on his left arm, but he couldn't remember much else. The guy had also said something
like,
about...
Born to Raise Hell, isn't that like a song or something?
I don't know.
I don't think it is, but I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
That tattoo plays a big part in the story later. So honestly, he should have never gotten it.
Well, meh.
I mean, he did kind of raise hell, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, he should have gotten it, because is that part of what caught him?
Oh, well, yeah. So actually, it's a good thing. Not on his part. But anyway, so the guy had also said something about shipping off to New Orleans.
Oh.
The detective began thinking back to the crime scene. The knots that bound the girls? That wasn't an amateur. Could it be that this was a Marine or a sailor? I mean, it would make sense.
Mm.
Let's see if I can do this without laughing. Oh my gosh, I'm a literal child.
Did you write like a full-on script? Because it sounds like it.
No, I just wrote down all the information I needed.
Oh.
I'm just good at acting, I suppose. Talking.
Okay.
If I can just stop laughing, I deserve a medal. Don't laugh, it'll make me laugh. Sorry, I'm like 12 years old. Not literally, but you know. Okay, it wouldn't make sense that he'd be a Marine or a sailor. Because adjacent to the crime scene was Seaman's Union Hall.
Seaman?
See? There it is.
Like, what? Was that a joke?
No, literally. C, like S-E-A. It's, I'm like, Marine sailor place.
Oh.
Okay. See, I knew I wasn't going to get through without laughing. Okay. The detectives visit the Union Hall. They ask if anyone has seen the man they described. They now also have the tattoo to go off of. They're at the desk of one of the Union Hall employees, and he tells them he thinks he knows the guy. He explained that this man was there the other day, and they gave him an assignment, but wound up giving it to another guy with more seniority. The employee reaches into the trash can below his desk and pulls out an assignment slip. Richard Speck.
That's the dude's name?
Good job!
Now we're getting somewhere.
On the paper, they find his emergency contact number. Okay. But they don't want to let anyone know yet about, you know, they suspect it's him in case it really is Richard.
Mm-hmm.
So they decide to set him up. They'll pretend they have a job assignment and he would go to the Union Hall and they would be able to get him. So they call the emergency contact in the paper and it's Richard's sister.
Oh.
She answers and they ask if Richard is there, saying they're calling about a job. She tells them he isn't there, but she would give him the message. The phone rings at the shipyard inn, a bar across town. A barkeep answers and makes an announcement. Richard Speck, your brother-in-law, called. They got a job for you down at the at the hall. I'm struggling today. I can't make as much jokes. I'm, like, being with you. I can't be funny.
It's hard.
It's your job to be funny today.
Yeah, okay.
I'm having a hard enough time speaking as it is. Okay, so the bartender gives Richard the number, and he calls. They tell him they have a job to be there at 5. Be there by 5. Richard says he would be there. Detectives will be waiting at the Union Hall for quite some time, because Richard never showed.
Oh.
So while detectives waited at the Union Hall, others went to the bar and started asking around, but there was no sign of Richard. This is infuriating what I'm about
to
say.
Is he like...
What?
Okay. All right. Say the infuriatingness.
Okay. So the detectives were at the bar, right?
Yeah.
So as everyone else said, they didn't see Richard. However, Richard was only a few feet away from them. He was in that bar.
Well, is he dead? Is he a ghost?
No. There's the funny part.
Yeah.
He managed to sneak out the back door without being noticed. I mean, it's infuriating to me. They were in the same place.
Yeah, but nobody knew. So why would you remember somebody you didn't? I like if I go to a restaurant or something, I'm trying to enjoy my time.
Oh yeah.
I'm not trying to like pay attention to who might be a murderer. But maybe I am.
Still, it's not great. Anyway, it was strange. For someone so desperate for work, why didn't he show?
Because he knew he was being caught.
It's because they screwed up big time. When Richard called, he asked what ship he would be going on and, like, where he'd be shipping out to. The guy on the phone says to a boat to New Orleans, the same boat that already shipped out that he was supposed to be on. So he gave him the same name of the boat and stuff that he was supposed to go on already.
Oh.
How stupid is that?
Oh. Well, yeah, that's...
Anyway, so he knew who's being set up. Okay, so at the crime scene, they find 3 fingerprints that they could hopefully match to Speck. Richard had quite the past. So I know, when we were doing the whole Ken and Barbie case, I said that with Paul Bernardo, didn't I? He had quite the past.
I don't know.
But probably. I'm not going... Yeah, I definitely did. We're not going down that route this time. We're going down a different route this time. Don't worry. It's not as dark. It's actually kind of funny.
Lily, what are you doing? Hey! Sorry.
Cat. Yeah. Anyway. Louis scares me.
Oh. All right.
The Chicago police contact the FBI and DC to see if they had anything on file for Richard Speck. They do. They have records from one of his many, many previous arrests. But they also had some bad news. The prints would take a while to get them, considering it was 1966. They didn't have the stuff we have now.
Oh, goddamn. I'm sure they had something somewhere.
No, you had to send it manually.
You literally, like, you could have sent somebody to deliver it, you know.
There was also a national airstrike at the time, which made it all more difficult. So now we're going to get back into, we're going to go and talk about Richard's background and all, about him. We're going to talk about him now. So, he was born on December 6th, 1941, in Kirkwood, Illinois.
Kirkwood, okay.
He was the seventh of eight children. His parents were Benjamin and Mary.
Okay, it seems to me that people with a ton of kids, one of them end up being a serial killer.
Yeah.
Don't have a ton of kids, people.
And they always have crappy lives, too. They either are really religious or just have other crappy problems.
Yeah. I mean, people that have over seven kids are kind of already like, wow, how the hell do you do that?
Yeah. But I feel like we're like, what?
If you have like eight kids, like, are you okay?
No.
Like, what happened?
Don't ask.
Like, I feel like how did you do this? Like, are you trying to be the next 20 kids and counting? I'm just joking. For those of you who don't know. If you want to have seven kids, go have seven kids. Cool, cool, cool. Treat them nice, though.
I feel like we're, like, all over the place during this.
Yeah, a little.
It's confusing, okay? We haven't done this before.
See like how this. I didn't say I wasn't editing?
We might. You might. Okay, so not long after his birth, the family moved to Monmouth.
Monmouth.
It's a weird name.
Monmouth. I was like, Monmouth. Okay.
Anyway, in 1947, his father died from a heart attack at age 53. This crushed Richard. I mean, he was super close to his dad. And in 1952, tragedy struck again. His older brother died in a car crash.
Oh, that sucks.
His mother remarried. His mom, her new husband, his youngest sister.
He molested him?
I'm not done.
Okay.
And himself moved to Dallas, Texas. The children were frequently verbally and physically abused by their often drunk stepfather.
Oh, so. So kind of close.
Close enough. Speck started drinking at a young age. I think it was by, like, 15, he was drinking every day.
That's young, but, like, in other countries, that's, like, the legal drinking age, so.
I know, but, like, the way he was drinking was not smart. Kid.
That's young.
He was drinking more than normal people should.
Anyway.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay.
He dropped out of high school at 16, and he took on odd jobs doing manual labor.
Okay.
He was first arrested at 13 for trespassing. He was arrested many times. Yeah. What?
I mean, what? Teenagers are dumb.
Okay. Oh, he's very dumb. Are dumb.
Just like, they do dumb things sometimes.
So, like, he was arrested many times for trespassing, burglary, and assault. In 1962... He met a girl a few years younger than him.
Like 10 years younger than him? Or a few years, like 4 years?
So he met a girl, 15-year-old Shirley Malone. Oh. So he was 21 at this time. Anyway, 3 weeks later, she got pregnant. She gave birth to their daughter, Robbie Lynn Speck, on July 5th, 1962. Richard was serving. Nice song.
Thank you. I thought it was.
Man, you should make us a whole intro song.
PB&J podcast. Do, 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 do.
I love it. Richard was serving a 22-day jail sentence at the time for birth. This is funny. I don't know. I literally couldn't explain to you. In 1963, I think this is hilarious. When he was 22, he was sentenced to 3 years for one, forging a coworker's check, and two, robbing a grocery store where he stole beer, cigarettes, and $3 in cash.
Three?
Oh, yes. But later it gets worse and funnier. Anyway, they released him after just 16 months. A week later, he was arrested again for threatening a woman with a knife in a parking lot. He was given another 16-month sentence. But due to an error, whatever that means, he was released after just 6 months.
That doesn't seem right.
Anyway, after this, he got a job as a truck driver, but got fired because of multiple accidents and no-shows. Oh. I feel like it takes skill to be a truck driver.
Yeah, you have to have your class A.
Yeah, but this was 19-something-something.
No, I think you've always had to.
Oh, well, this is Richard. He's special.
Yeah.
Anyway, in December of 1965, he moves in with a 29-year-old divorcee. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
I think it is. Yeah. Which his mother orchestrated all of this.
Oh.
She was looking for someone to stay home and babysit her children. And if I can remember, I think she was like a retired, not retired, she was like a WWE kind of chick.
Oh.
If I remember correctly. Okay. Anyway. He files for divorce from his wife shortly after moving in with this girl.
Was that the one who had the baby?
Yes. Mm. In that same month, he stabbed a man in a bar brawl, which he did three days in jail for.
He just was charged, three?
What? Yeah. He was charged with a $10 fine, which he did not want to pay, is why he served the 3 days.
Oh, God.
Which, I mean, it's $10, but also it's worth more back then.
Yeah, but it's still $10. That would probably be, worth, maybe $15, $20.
Oh, this is the funniest arrest, in my opinion. Even more funny than the $3 one.
Okay.
So, on March 5th, 1966, he buys an old car.
Okay.
The next evening, he robs a grocery store of all of their cigarettes and starts selling them out of the trunk of his car in the grocery store parking lot.
Oh.
He's so stupid. Anyway, he abandoned the car and the police put out a warrant for what would be his 42nd arrest.
Oh my God.
He knew if he got brought in on this warrant, he would automatically be sent to prison. So his younger sister takes him to the Dallas bus depot and he goes to Chicago. Once he gets to Chicago, he stays with his sister Martha, her husband, and their two teenage daughters. Oh. Eventually, they had enough of him and brought him to the Union Hall.
Makes sense. He seems kind of like a jerk butt.
That's a good way of putting it. That's a nice way of putting it, I suppose. He gets a room at a hotel that night. The Union Hall calls him in for the ship to New Orleans.
Okay.
This is actually the day of the murders.
Oh.
He arrives at the dock at 5 p.m. and was told the other guy got it. Hours later, he committed the murders.
Oh.
While the detectives were waiting for the fingerprints, there was a brief encounter between Richard and the police. This is 2 days after the murder.
And they didn't know what this man looked like?
You'll see why.
Whatever.
A hotel worker calls the police and said a guest is in possession of a gun. The police arrive and knock on the door of David Staten. They ask for his ID, and his name is Richard Speck, not David Staten.
Yeah.
They question why the room is under a different name, and they question the gun. I have to whisper this one. He claimed the gun belonged to a sex worker.
Oh!
Sorry, my family's home.
You literally could have just said, take two guesses, and I probably would have gotten it on, the fourth or fifth try.
Well, we'll do that later in the whole conversation. He picked up the night before, and she had it for protection.
Oh.
The police take the gun and leave, which also, I don't believe that statement. Actually, I don't know. I can't remember. I think that actually is true. Maybe. I don't know. I think, I don't know.
Brianna's brain is a
Something about chicken soup. Anyway, the police take the gun and leave. Richard leaves the hotel after this encounter. I mean, obviously.
What? Yeah, I said sorry.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, he obviously leaves after this encounter. So, these cops were not part of the investigation. Man, I was meant to write, I was supposed to type we're, like, were, yeah. And I put we.
What was that?
Anyway. Okay, maybe I will be a bit funny today. Okay, so they were not a part of the investigation. Sorry, I typed it, so I gotta say it. So they had no idea that Richard Speck was the main suspect.
Okay.
So the police were at a standstill. They could release Richard's picture out to the press, But if they did this without having concrete evidence, Richard would probably not be arrested.
Yeah, probably not. But someone, maybe.
Well, maybe. Anyway, someone in D.C. offered to personally deliver the fingerprints. Oh, so damn. Now the Chicago police have the fingerprints, and they match the ones at the crime scene. They now know that Richard Speck is responsible. They release his mugshot, you know, from his 41 yeah. arrests, along with a full description. A full city search ensues. It's everywhere. He gets another hotel room and begins mapping out how to get out of here. Like, how to get out there. Because, I mean, the police are at the bus places and all that kind of stuff. So
the bus places?
Yeah, you know what I mean. The places with the buses. Anyway, he's screwed.
The bus stop?
No, the bus terminals. That's a word. Yeah, that's the word. Anyway.
I'm pretty sure for the people at home, she's talking about a bus stop.
Okay. Late that day, 72 hours after the murders.
He killed more?
No.
Oh.
He stopped after 8 people, don't worry. Okay. At a hospital across town, a patient is brought in for a suicide attempt.
Oh.
The patient had attempted to... I can't spell anything today. Anyway, the patient had attempted to slash the wrist, and as a doctor wipes away the blood, he notices a familiar tattoo. Born to raise hell. Born you get it? You get it? I thought it was a girl. No, I may have said she by accident. I'm sorry. I can't spell. I'm the one that wrote we instead of we're.
We!
Anyway, obviously, the doctor knew who he was. I mean, everyone did. The tattoo had been in the description in the news and paper. The doctor tells authorities, and they arrest him. I feel so weird the way I'm talking right now.
No, it sounds profesh.
Ooh, I'm fancy now.
Yeah.
Okay. 7 months later, it goes to trial. So 7 months, people were waiting for this. No one expected Cora to be present during the trial. I mean, she hadn't been seen in the past 7 months. People had just assumed she had gone back to the Philippines. But at 11 a.m. on the third day of the trial, Cora busted into that courtroom.
Go girl!
Richard was probably shocked. He had no idea there were 9 girls there that night. Not 8. They ask Cora to identify the killer. She walks right up to Richard and points her finger in his face and says, "It was him." Ooh. Like, you go, girl.
Go, babe. Get it.
Anyway.
The killer.
Are you ready to hear what happened that night? You ready? Yeah. Are you on the edge of your seat?
Ow. No, but I'm laying down on my bed.
Anyway. She recounted the events of that night. She had opened the door, and he had a gun. He took the girls to the back bedroom and told them to sit down. He told them he wasn't going to hurt them, and he just needed money to get to New Orleans. Cora said some girls gave him money and hoped he would leave, but the girls that were from the Philippines had experiences before back home. He takes the money from the girls that did give him the money, but he doesn't leave. So they knew something was up, obviously.
Yeah.
He took the bed sheets off of, what's her name, Patricia Matusik's bed? That's correct.
Matusik?
Matusik?
I don't think you're saying that right.
No, that is how it is.
Okay.
Something like that.
I can't see.
She takes the bed, he takes the bed sheets and cuts it into ropes he used to tie the girls. First, he took Pamela Wilkening out of the room.
Wilkening?
Yes.
Okay.
He takes her out of the room, and as he did so, 2 more girls came home. Suzanne Ferris and Marianne Jordan. They happened to have been out that they were out late that night.
Well, maybe they should have come home like 20 minutes later.
Maybe they shouldn't come home at all.
Yeah.
But anyway, Cora said from the room they were in, they couldn't see what happened, but they could hear. They heard struggling and then silence. Let's see if I can get these names right. Richard came back in the room, taking the girls out one by one. Patricia Matusik. Nina Jo Schmill, Marlita Gargulo, Valentina Passion, and Gloria Davey. Yeah, I got that right.
Okay.
Terrifying trying to say the three. Close enough, at least. Yeah, they're hard names, okay? Okay. I just can't pronounce anyone's name, okay? Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't even spell your name. I can't even spell your name.
It is true.
It's okay. It's fine. Cora knew she would be next, so while Richard was out of the room, she slid herself under a bed.
Oh.
Gloria Davey was the last victim. He brought her to the living room. You want to take some guesses? Because I don't want to say this now.
R and
yeah.
Mer.
And
Der.
Yeah.
Anyway. And then, yeah.
Yeah. He lost count of the bodies in the killing spree. So, well, he forgot about Cora.
Doesn't it take, like, a bit of energy to, you know, blop, 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 blop.
Almost a lot more.
I don't know
if gummy bears!
Sorry. Did you just find gummy bears, like, under your bed or something?
No. Thank you.
Oh, hi, family.
Okay, I'm back. I have 25 gummy bears laying on me right now. Probably more. Anyway.
Okay.
These are really freaking good. Oh, my God. They're on my foot. Okay. Can you hear me chewing?
Yep. Let's not do that.
Tell you some more. On April 15th, 1967, after just 49 minutes of deliberation, the jury found 26-year-old Richard Speck guilty and was sentenced to death in the electric chair. But in 1971, the death penalty laws changed.
Yeah.
And his sentence was changed to life in prison. He was given 1,200 years.
Oh, my God.
In prison, he was called Birdman because he kept a pair of sparrows that flew into his cell. Oh. Hold on, I'm chewing. Hold on.
No, stop.
I'm doing it on purpose.
No more
chewing.
He was
described as a loner.
Not liking it.
He was described as a loner who kept himself most of the time. Although in the later years in prison that he was there, he opened up more. He was caught multiple times with moonshine, cocaine, and other illegal drugs. Punishments are for these things never stopped him, though. I mean, how was he going to get in trouble? He was there for 1,200 years.
1,200? That's what he said.
Yeah, 1,200.
That's not blue, that's green.
Okay, I'm gonna need another one. Are you mad at me? Anyway, I'll get back to the story. Where was I?
Silent treatment.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm giving you the silent treatment.
Okay. Speck loathed reporters.
Loathed?
Yeah, loathed. He hated them.
Oh,
and he granted only one press interview in 1978. Chicago Tribune's columnist Bob Green.
Okay.
During the interview, he publicly confessed to the murders for the first time and said he thought he'd be out of prison between now and the year 2000, which time he hoped to run his own grocery store business.
What?
Yeah. Anyway, he said it was just supposed to be another burglary, but it went wrong. At one point, a guard told him, okay, so this is about the sparrows he keeps. This is insane. So at one point, a guard told him that pets weren't allowed, referring to the sparrows. Richard said, I can't have it. Then he walked over to a metal fan and threw the bird into it. The guard was like, what the heck just happened, you know? He said, I thought you liked that bird. I did, Speck said. But if I can't have it, no one can.
Ew.
Okay, so, I can't say every detail, but I'll text them to you later. I can't say it on here, though. Okay. In prison, a lot happened. We are going to go over it for, you know, family-friendly reasons.
Did he have a boyfriend?
I'm not gonna say anything.
Did he have a boyfriend? I can dumb it down.
No, I don't think. If you guys really want to know, I found this on Wikipedia, and
have a guy toy? A boy toy.
Depends.
Sorry.
I don't know really. Anyway,
hey, if you really want to know, you get the point. If you're an adult, or
it's on the internet.
If you're old enough, you get it.
Usually, I don't trust Wikipedia, but it is true this time. And yeah, if you want to see it, it's on there.
Okay, let's keep going.
A reporter or something came and videotaped the events of a day or something there. Speck said, if they only knew how much fun I was having, they'd turn me loose. on the videotape, you can hear a prisoner ask Speck if he had killed the nurses. Speck responded, "Sure, I did." When asked why, Speck shrugged and jokingly said, "It just wasn't their night." Asked how he felt about himself in the years since, he said, "Like I always felt, I had no feeling. If you're asking me if I feel sorry, no." He also described in detail the experience of strangling someone.
Yeah.
It's not like TV. It takes over 3 minutes, and you have to have a lot of strength. On December 5th, 1991, at age 49, the day before his 50th birthday, Richard Speck died of a heart attack.
Ha! Ha ha.
He died the same way his dad did.
That's to suck.
And that's all I have for you today. So how do you feel about that?
Welcome, everyone.
What are your thoughts? Oh, that's not blue. That's green.
My thoughts are that was dark. And that I am fine. All right. Bye, guys. Have a good night.
Bye. Bye. Bye.